Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri podcast by me, veterinary ethologist Myrn Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed. This week, Whit had his surgery. He had half of his thyroid gland removed. And I do hope that within a few days, I'm going to be able to get some pictures of him and do a written blog on this so you can see how he looks. He's never been a big fan of having his picture taken under the best of circumstances. And as he's gotten older, he's become even more resistant to that. But what I wanted to just ruminate about is, or are some thoughts that have been running through my mind since he's come home. Specifically in terms of a country and western song title that keeps recurring in my mind, the song being Oh, the Pain of Loving You. Now, those of you who know me probably realize that the fact that the title of any country and western song comes into my mind is actually bizarre. That if I had said, you know, ever since Whit came home, what I just can't keep out of my mind is Saint-Saëns' Organ Concerto or Beethoven's Pastorale. But no, in reality, it is the song, Oh, the Pain of Loving You. And the reason for this is because, as usual, animals and how they respond to pain just utterly amazes me. Whit came home with, I guess it's about a 5-inch incision. Looks about 5 miles long to me, but it's about a 5-inch incision and it's staple shut. So there are a lot of staples on there, and he kind of looks like an old scrawny stuffed toy who's been stitched together. And because only a half of his thyroid was involved, the other half will function, so he didn't come home on any medication, including pain medication. And I know that just hearing that would probably make some, and maybe even a lot of you, cringe and say, oh my God, that is so inhumane. How could anyone choose to do this? And in reality, it was a conscious choice. The reality being that drugs are drugs. And the more drugs you put into the system, the more chance for side effects. Also, those drugs have to go somewhere. They have to be metabolized and cleared from the system. And that usually means liver and kidneys. Older cats are not notorious for having excellent kidney function, although Whit's blood work was okay, but we did know that he had some liver problems because of the hyperthyroidism. So my feeling was, we'll play it by ear. But still, particularly, I would say in the maybe the past 10 years, where pain medication for animals has really, really been pushed by both the pharmacological and the veterinary communities, this has become a real issue. And so the feeling is better too much than too little. And I'm old enough that I remember the days before pain medication. And because we didn't have the convenience of pain medication, we were forced to deal with it in a different way. And one of the different ways of dealing with it is to reduce fear. And there are all kinds of studies out there about the relationship between fear and pain. The more fear, the more pain. And so we were, you know, after animals were anesthetized when they were coming up. I mean, you just did everything to make it as easy as possible. So in Witt's case, he stayed with his crate. And he went in, and the surgery was done right away. And then I picked him up as soon as I could the next morning. He was in his crate again. He came home. But still, you know, it's especially now. I mean, you get it just beaten into your head that you are inhumane if you don't have these animals blotto for at least 24 to 48, maybe longer, hours after they come out of surgery. Because, oh, my God, when you look at the length of that incision and staples, oh, God, it just kills me to think about it. I could never, you know. So that's what I'm dealing with when I put the crate up on the counter away from the dogs. And opened it. I mean, and this is even knowing, you know, that I had watched him in the crate. I'd listened to him purr all the way home. So I opened the crate, and I'm thinking, we had anesthesia yesterday. What should I do? Well, maybe I'll just see if he wants a little bit of food. At that point, Whit comes sauntering out of the crate onto the counter, rubs up against me, purrs, looks where his dish normally should be, turns around and gives me a, well, what is your problem? Look, where is the food? And so I gave him the food and I gave him some water. And then he jumped off the counter. And then he jumped up on the dog couch and the dogs were all around him. And I'm thinking, oh, God, oh, I don't want him to hurt him. You know. He snarled at him and went and lay down on his little special place under the window in the living room. And then a little while later, he wanted to go out and wander around the yard like he always did. And it was extraordinary. And this has always been my experience with animals. The fear isn't there. And I remember reading years ago about how the pain response, a negative response to pain, is a learned one. That in animals, in wild animals, pain is what's referred to as self-limiting. And that if the animal does, let's say they have a sore limb or an irritated gut. And what the pain says is, don't use that leg or don't eat for a while, because if you do, you're going to be uncomfortable. And the smart animals quickly figure out, well, I better not use that leg for a while. I better take it easy. I better rest. I better not eat for a day or so and see how I feel. And it's a beautiful, beautiful mechanism. But somewhere along the line, pain became associated with failure. That somehow if we felt pain, if we listened to our bodies, that we were somehow inferior human beings. And that what we need to do is to deny that the pain was there. And particularly with animals, this is a problem. I've seen situations of animals with fractured legs and with pins, and they go home and they're on pain medication and they're bouncing around, and the animals are happy and the owners are happy because the animal looks like there's nothing wrong. And the reality is everyone's in a state of pharmacological denial. And so what happens is the dog hears or sees something and goes flying off the couch and breaks that leg around the pin. I'm not saying that I'm completely against pain medication. I'm not. There are certain individuals, both human and animal, who need pain medication for the animal. They simply could not stand it if the animal was not on medication, simply because they can't imagine themselves not being in pain under those circumstances. And I can appreciate this, because even with all my knowledge about my own cat, my relationship with him, my knowledge about the pain medications, the pros and the cons, still, when I opened that crate door the first time, my immediate expectation was that he would not be able to cope, that he would be uncomfortable, that there would be, you know, there would be something wrong with him. And that's when I realized that my love for him, my expectations, could be causing him pain. And I didn't want to do that. Not after all this time. And so when he came strutting out of that crate and said, "Where's my food?" And I'm home and I'm getting back to my deal here. I've been out, you know. Been gone for a day. Got to check around, make sure everything's okay. I thought, you know, Myrn, get the hell out of the way and let this animal heal himself.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Katova Arts, www.katova.com.